Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Pamela Leach. She describes herself as a seeker of wisdom, truth, joy and happiness, and it is her belief that we are here at this time and in this place to bring love, joy and happiness to the world, even if only one person at the time. So, that's a very nice way, I think, to view life and the world. Welcome to the program, Pamela.
Well, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
Good. Well, I do know of you through Russ Michael, and I'm sure a lot of other people do as well. Describe your early years as a young child and up to the age of 16 when, from what I understand, it must have in some ways molded you for the way you looked at life in the future.
Well, it certainly did. I had the incredible experience at the age of about 3 and a half of losing my father and my uncle the day after my family returned from Germany. My father had been in the service, and so I literally did not know anybody in this family. And, of course, then my mother was busy. She's a young widow a day after returning home. Mm. And it was sort of the start of my finding, I believe, my independence that I relied on for the bulk of my years. And it was, a confusing experience. You know, when you're that young, you don't really understand what's going on. It's just everything in your world changes so drastically.
Right.
So there, you know, even after all of that, though, my mother did meet and marry a wonderful man who provided a wonderful upbringing for us. He really was my father. We were never treated as stepchildren. I don't have any really horror stories from that, but I do have a mother that believed in the metaphysical and had the books on the bookshelves, and so I kind of grew up knowing about this kind of stuff, but not thinking that I had the ability to do any of it. I, of course, look back now and can see where that was developed, but I grew up not feeling that I had anything special, any special skills. It always felt to me like everybody else kind of knew the rules of the game, and I didn't even know what game was being played.
Right.
And not through anybody's fault. There's no blame in this. There's no judgment in this. But I believe this is the same story that a lot of us have that come to this point in our lives, that something and somewhere in there, we had to wake up and work hard to find who we were and
yes,
to understand that we had a place in this world.
Right. Now, during that your early life in your teens, you mentioned how you started attending a friend's church, the Modern Quakers. It gives the impression that your family actually went to that church. Was that so, or was that your own choice?
No, it was my family went. My mother was intrigued by the church, and mainly because there was a woman minister or preacher that taught every week, and that was a little different for that space and time, but that is kind of how it goes in the Friends Church. In the modern Friends Church, it's not quite the same as what you see in the movies with the old Quakers, where you're all just sitting there on opposite sides of the church. It really was
right,
more like a traditional church.
Yes.
But it was quiet, and I was fascinated by the tenets, especially the pacifist tenets, and when they refused to grant the objection, then I can't even think of the name of it now. I'm a little nervous, I guess. Conscientious objection. I was around 15, 16 at the time, and I was devastated. It just, how could you not hold to the basic tenet of what this religion is supposed to believe? And even then, and forevermore, I am passionate in what I believe in. The difference between then and now is I have to keep that open mind and look at, is this an old belief system, and do I need to change?
Right.
Or do I hold on to this particular one? Is this truth?
Yes.
That was the beginning of my completely rejecting anything of that sort for a long time.
Right. Yes, I noticed you did mention that you remained disillusioned with Christianity as it was presented to you as a child and a young adult. And I have to say, speaking for myself, I wasn't quite in your position, but I was always very inquisitive. And I used to go to the Church of England regularly. But what used to disappoint me was you couldn't get answers to some of the questions you had in your mind. Things sort of remained a mystery, and then sometimes you found, or I did, sort of contradictions in the Bible that they were teaching. So, like you, I wasn't really satisfied, and it wasn't until, let me see, I was in my 30s that I actually found my true path. So we're a little bit the same in that sense. Now, you must have gone on for some time feeling, as you described it, depressed, in a negative state of mind, where before you began your spiritual journey. So how old were you then?
I was in my 40s when I really started getting serious that there must be something more. I was so unhappy in my work life. I was just in that totally depressed state. And this, you know, that state of this can't be all there is. What's the point? If this is it, then, and always that sense of there is something more, there's something beyond. You know, that sort of knock at your door that spirit has that we don't answer so many times. Mm. And I changed my life once again. I moved back. I had been living in Texas for many years, had married there, and I moved my husband and me back to Michigan to be closer to my family. And I started this kind of spiritual search, but I did it again like so many people do. I kind of dibbled here and dabbled there and not really taking a serious enough look, you know, just sort of reading the books and going to some classes and kind of being a dilettante about it and not taking it really seriously. Finding some answers, but not really doing the work, not really finding the direction. And then somewhere along in there, I couldn't even tell you where, I obviously hit something. I read a book. One of my main books was by Margaret Starbird, The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, which literally flipped a switch in my brain and opened me up to Christed energy once again. Gave me a completely new look. And I recognized I wasn't, and I shouldn't have been so angry at Jesus, so angry at the God of the New Testament anyway, and so rejecting of all of the points in there, in that the good stuff, the truth that is in there, it's, they weren't the problem. It was the dogma and the doctrine that was in the church.
Right.
And still is.
Yeah.
But it's still out there. You can find in my little church that I go to, there the pastor there actually does connect to spirit. It makes a difference whether they just read the words or whether they can feel it and live it and explain it.
Right. Now, when you were looking around for some sort of truth, and you said you were looking at Eastern religions, I wondered if you happened to come across Buddhism, and did you find anything acceptable in that?
I absolutely did. I thought it was a beautiful philosophy, and I still do. And what I discovered is that when you actually start researching and looking at the mystery schools, the higher levels of all of these religions, they're all the same. And
yes,
that's where truth resides. The same story gets told over and over. So it's not in just one place. It really is that all roads lead home. And all these little mystery schools, Sufism is the same way. All these things have the same basic truth.
Yes.
The same highest principle. And they all teach to go within. They all teach to make that connection to God. They all teach that we are the divine. They all teach that our first job is cleaning ourselves up.
Yes,
and they all
indeed
teach that we are the answer.
Right now, somewhere in your younger years, I believe you, am I correct in saying you nearly had a near-death experience?
Yes, and not in such my younger years. As I was doing the search, my second huge wake-up call was an operation that went drastically wrong, what was supposed to be and in and out, you know, in on Thursday, back to work on Monday, turned out to be nearly the death of me. But it was actually the beginning of the life of me. That was the time that I really spent communing with spirit and floating in what felt to me like the womb of the mother. I don't know how else to describe it. It was just floating in pure blackness, but it wasn't a scary black. It was more a soft, warm, comforting feeling of being in the womb. And the nearest I can explain it is it's like that baby floating in space at the end of 2001, A Space Odyssey. It felt like that. It felt like the birth of a new me. I didn't care at that point whether I went on home or I came back into this life. It was just, I completely lost my fear of death. I could see that there was more beyond. I felt the presence of Source in, through, and around me. And it was just the beginning of the lessons that I really needed to get to the space that I am right now. And, of course, these lessons continue and continue. The difference is I really, really try to avoid those 2x4s on the back of my head and try to listen to God's whispers now.
Right.
And now, that was a 2x4.
Do I understand correctly here that at that same time when you had that experience, that you weren't recovering very well with the drugs and you actually changed to a herbal treatment and you got better quite rapidly?
I did. When they sent me home, out of the first 30 days, I spent 17 days in the hospital and the rest of the time in a hospital bed at home and just getting sicker and sicker. And I was about to go on my third trip back to the hospital because I was just not getting any better. And a friend of mine said, this is enough, and went to the health food store, told them all 14 of the prescriptions I was on at that time, half of them to deal with the side effects from the other half. And they went through and picked out every herbal complement to that, and she came and also juiced for me, juiced 50 carrots, made all of these little meals for me that I could put in the freezer and get out to eat a little bit at a time, all healthy based. And within 24 hours, I started to feel better. I could feel the difference. When I took that first sip of carrot juice, it's like my whole body just said, finally. It just went, ah.
Yeah.
I started to feel the benefits right then. And I continued to get better from then on. And now I'm on nothing. I take a few, some vitamins and some magnesium and vitamin D, and that's about it.
Right, yes. Well, that's a wonderful story and a very good advert, if you like, for herbal treatments.
Oh, absolutely. And, just, you know, it's eating natural foods, whole foods. And I have a lot of friends that are into the raw food diet. I don't go that extreme. I don't feel the need to. But it certainly works for a lot of people if they're going through cancers and things like that. But I am not sick. And so I just am more concerned with the whole food, not the processed food, not the Monsanto GM seeds and all of that. And we grow our own garden. I'm so lucky to have a husband that loves the garden, loves to can his own produce. And he does a wonderful job of it. I swear to the healing properties of his salsa. It's good on everything.
Right. Oh, wonderful, yes. Now, at what stage did you move to the study group, which were using the course in miracles?
That was in Michigan. And that was that's another kind of beautiful story there. And this happened after the illness. I'm telling you, that was the beginning of my having to figure out how to get rid of some of the ego and really get into spirit.
Yes.
And follow what God has for me, what spirit has for me, what source has for me, rather than what my mind can take it to. Big lessons there. And so I tried to start a business with the wrong partner, and when it failed, I again felt like a failure. And I was devastated, and I was very, very angry again at God, and I said, what are you doing to me? What am I supposed to do? I was about ready to drive off a cliff.
Right. And,
you know, it was terrible. And in another little series of miracles here, in a brand new cell phone, I had the number of this person that facilitated. She wasn't really a friend. She was an acquaintance. But her number was in my phone. I hadn't spoken to her in 6 months. I'd only had the phone for maybe a couple of weeks. I don't know how the number got in there.
Uh-huh.
But there it was. And I knew she was a counselor, or had been a counselor. I knew she'd had to leave her job because of some health issues. So I was desperate, and I had to lose that sort of sense of independence. I will do everything on my own. Not a good thing for spiritual people to think that everything is all through you. And I was at that desperate point where it was either let go and let God or just give it up altogether. And so I called that number, and I asked her, and I was quite hysterical, I have to say, at the time, if she would help me. I said, I need help. I need to talk to somebody. I need help. And she said, yes, I'll help you. And I did not realize at the time, until much later, actually, when I was thanking her yet again for being there and what she had done for me. And she said, well, Pam, don't you realize, you know, you did as much for me. I was at a very low point in my life, too. I was not feeling worthy, and I had no joy in my life. I had nothing to do. I was in pain from this issue with my ankle and all of this, and I was not feeling useful. I felt of no use to anyone. Mm-hmm. And I got your call. You said, you saved me as much as I saved you. And when I heard that, and when you can see so directly how the divine can order our path, and when we just listen, and we can see that divine order, what this does to us just on an individual level. And when it does it on the individual level, it is that micro to macro thing that happens. You know, whatever happens in our personal life, it resonates out. Yes. We are that pebble in the pond, and whatever we do, whatever actions we take, it resonates out to everybody around us.
Yes. That is the proof, I think, that we are one group of souls, and as you said in as many words, whatever we do affects everybody else.
It absolutely does. And that, you know, we were talking about the religions earlier, and that is another highest truth in all of these religions, that we are not an island to ourselves, that mm-hmm. what we do affects others in ways that we never know. And that's why it's so important to attend to our own spirituality, to be aware and conscious of how we interact in the world, because it makes a difference. Yes. We can make somebody's day, or we can ruin somebody's day with an unkind word. And we don't know how that resonates out.
Mm.
And yet we can make somebody's day just by being conscious and aware and acknowledging somebody's existence. You know, I always kind of liken it to, you know, the gas station clerk. Theirs must be a pretty horrible job, because people are just shoving money at them all day, and nobody's even really looking at them most of the time. There's no interaction. There's just in and out. And they feel like robots. And I say, just take the time once in a while just to acknowledge, even if they're being really grouchy or obnoxious or whatever, recognize that it's not about you. And don't take their actions personally. Recognize that they might be having a really bad day. And yes. just say something nice. Look them in the eye and acknowledge their existence. Let them see that you can see the spirit within them. And it makes a difference.
Yes. Yes, I think a little bit of advice that I sometimes use is that if you are with people that you may be not particularly fond of, mm-hmm. nevertheless, try and see what is good in them and not what is bad.
That's true. And like you said, it can be very difficult at times. And it's really hard when it's a person that is in control of some part of your life. Maybe it's your boss or a family member, and it sometimes all you can do, especially when they're right in your face with something, is still get still in yourself, step back from the emotions. Sometimes all you can do is concentrate on, oh, that's kind of a nice tie.
Mm.
Find something that you can be positive about and breathe deep, and do not respond in the same energy. And then the energy cannot go anywhere else. And then you can sometimes, what I had to find out the hard way, as you can see, I'm a talker, is sometimes I just have to shut up and listen. And then I can really figure out what's going on. And I mean listen to the person, not listen to what I think they're going to say, listen to what I think I should be responding to, but actually listen to the words, look at the energy, figure out what's really going on with this person. Because most of the time, that isn't about me either.
Mm. Right, now,
big lesson.
You mentioned a period in your life when you started to have dreams that were direct communications with God. Now, we all dream at various times. What was different about those to lead you that you to leave you to believe or know that you actually had a direct communication with God?
Well, for one thing, I had not been a person that remembered my dreams, hardly ever. And for another, they were way too detailed. They were very intense. I would wake up and go right back into the same dream, or that dream picked up to the next level. And the there was always a message in there. There was always something, and it wasn't for me. And that is what really got my attention there, too. And again, another little bit of upset. Me and God, we've had some conversations, I can tell you. it's like, okay, you're going to make me think like I'm going crazy. It was crazy-making dreams. This was not normal. These were not like any dreams I'd ever had. They were so filled with details. It was like living the dream. And unlike anything I'd ever done or had ever experienced. And so that was one level. And on another level, it was just a knowing that this was beyond me. It's very hard to explain that until it happens to you. But it's until you can tell the difference. When you're in the dream and you're the participant in the dream and you're the observer of the dream, and then there's that third level, there's an observer of everything.
Yes.
When you can feel that presence in your head, that's not you. That seeing everything that's going on and analyzing everything that's going on at the same time that you're participating in the dream.
Right. Now, so when you said...
it sort of becomes visions.
Yeah. When you said that the messages weren't for you, but they were for other people, did you mean they were personal ones or just for general consumption, if you like?
No, I'm talking it was for a specific person.
Oh, right.
And when I would tell that person about the dream, it would be using symbology that they understood, that they recognized.
Yes.
It happens the same now in the readings that I do for people. I will get things in all the time that make no sense to me, and there's always that dialogue, even as I'm talking to people, there's always that dialogue in my head with spirit going, "Do you want me to say that? That sounds crazy. doesn't make any sense." And I'm told, just say it, just say it. And I will say it. I'll always say, I know this might sound crazy, but... And it makes perfect sense to that person. It's their symbol. It's their symbology. It's their... it makes sense to them. It's relevant to them, not to me. And so I have, it's another thing that I just have to learn to relax and let spirit flow and give them what I get. Because
it doesn't have to make sense to me.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty clever of spirit to convey a dream through you that you can't understand for obvious reasons, yet the person who's receiving it can. It's really proof that it's come from another source and not you.
That's right. It's stuff that doesn't make sense to me. I'm dreaming about cars and bumpers and making sure that the bumper is completely fixed. And I'm not a car person, but the person I'm telling the dream to goes, "Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, you have to make sure that you it can look fine from the outside, but you have to make sure it's all right on the inside, or else next time you get in a crash, you're going to crash and burn. It's going to really damage the car." Oh, okay. I have no idea how that works, but okay. Makes no sense to me, but it made perfect sense to them.
Yes, indeed. Now, some people might ask you, And I will, for the benefit of our listeners. When you said you had the communications with God, how did you know it was God? I mean, was that just a knowing again, or did the energy that you linked with tell you?
No, it was, I have to say it was more the knowing. There were some other experiences that I had that a guide, let's say, came in trying to say that it was my guide, and I'm going, but why would I have to come through this now when I've already had that? There was just something wrong. And this is when I started learning how to discern what comes from source and what comes from something other than, yes, is that there's always something wrong. And it's more that feeling that you get inside when you recognize when something really resonates with you. We all have our the way our body responds. With me, I know when I get, it's like a full starburst in my chest. You know, it just resonates. And there are some things that come through, and this is what has caught me up in this before, where it'll feel 99.99% true. It'll be something that I really want to accomplish in my life. It just resonates almost, and I get that one little wiggle in my belly button. And I had to learn the hard way, always follow the wiggle. If it doesn't come in as full truth, leave it alone. There's something wrong. It's not from the right source.
So these communications that you receive from God, presumably that was the start of your being a psychic reader, but I understand you didn't actually want to be one.
I didn't even have it in my mind that that was my path. I enjoyed the spiritual work. I enjoyed getting some of the messages, but no, I didn't. And it was really a couple of friends of mine over a series of years telling me, Pam, you really need to be doing this. They were working psychic. And I was in conversations and things and counseling and basically doing readings for them without realizing that's what I was doing. And they're the ones that really encouraged me. And then just their, I contacted an author and just complimented him on a book that he had written and really enjoyed it and kind of gave me a little bit of a story. And he gave me a little mini reading back that basically said, what are you doing? Get out of your room. You've read enough. You've hidden yourself away long enough. It's time to do something. You can't just study and read and hide away. You have to go do something. And that really struck a chord. And it's like, yeah, you're right. You know, it's so much easier just to hide away and be in my room and pretend like I'm really doing something there when I'm not contributing a thing to the world. And then it helped to lose my job, and it helped to, you know, things get taken away. When you're not following your path, God has a way of taking everything but that away from you.
Yes.
And that's kind of what happened to me.
Hmm. It's interesting.
There was nothing else to do.
Mm.
And I don't regret a moment of my journey.
Well, I have a very good friend whose early life followed a similar path, that he was a businessman and his businesses kept going bankrupt. And it wasn't until about the third one that he realized, I think, that he had to concentrate on his spiritual path. And up to this time now, he's been very much involved in giving talks, running workshops, groups, and he's totally devoted to it. And I couldn't help thinking, like you just said, that when Spirit wants you to do something different, they make sure that you do.
There, again, it's the 2x4s, and you get tired enough of the 2x4s, and you start listening to God's whispers. Yes, I do see that happen in so many people's lives, and it is a way of having to let go of things, too, to recognize what's really important in your life, and it's not things. And it's not even really the people in your life. If they don't serve the greater purpose, and I know on the outside that sounds heartless, but it isn't. There are a lot of people out there that just don't understand, and there's a lot that do, that just feed off the energy, and they don't really contribute. They don't want to do the work. And I have had, you know, a few clients that I've had to say, I'm sorry, you know, until you take this next step, I can't help you anymore. You can't call back with the same question in the same space. I'm not here for accolades. I'm not looking for followers. I'm looking for people to help get them on their path. I'm not a teacher. I'm a teacher student. There's not a client that hasn't grown that I haven't learned from as well. And that has to be the attitude that we go into everything. We are student teachers.
Yes, indeed.
And teacher students. We have to accept that role. And we have to work on ourselves. There's nothing we can do for anybody else that we have to attend to it in ourselves first.
It's
all
funny.
About the inside-out thing, not outside-in.
Right. It's funny you should mention that, because I was just about to ask you about learning to love your inner self. Why do you think people are unaware that they should love themselves?
Because they have that voice inside, that inner child, that fear that if they went too deep inside, that there's nothing there, or that it's really, really dark. One of my early dreams was I was floating on a mattress in the ocean. What showed it to me. I'm floating on a mattress in the ocean, and around me, around this whole mattress, was just all kinds of trash and detritus and dead rats. I mean, it was nasty. And I fell off the mattress into this mess and this gunk. But I could see down through this water, and it was absolutely beautiful and pristine and gorgeous at the bottom. The bright fish, the coral, everything just around there. But I was so tired. I was so tired. And I was too afraid to dive deep into that water. I was afraid I would drown. I was afraid I would lose myself. And so all I could do at that moment was climb back on the mattress. But I always remember that dream, because it is that fear of diving deep into our own unknown depths. It is that fear of losing our identity, ourself. That's our ego fear of letting go and letting God, that we will lose our identity, that we will become nothing in this mass of whatever is out there. And so they get afraid. It's a fear, and it's an ego fear. And that's the hardest thing to get rid of, but also the easiest thing to do when you start doing the actual work. And I teach people to not be so afraid to face these inner demons. Because they'll find out it's just little bruises. It's little bruises on their heart. It's little bruises on their soul. It's the voices that told them they were less than their entire lives. they were too little of this and too much of that. And we take all that in from the time we were born, and sometimes from within the womb, and some of the stuff is past life stuff that we bring in with us. But we cannot be afraid to keep working at those layers. And I hear people say, well, you know, I've been peeling the layers of the onion, and I'm so, you know, good, that's great. Now you're going to get down to scraping that nacre off the pearl. This is not as easy as peeling the layer off an onion. You have to really kind of scrape and go deep and not be so afraid, because once you start doing the process, nothing is as hard as the first time you have that first big breakthrough. Nothing is harder than that. Nothing. And so you just keep going deeper. And a little secret that I learned from my counselor was, whenever you're looking at past issues, whenever you're feeling these buttons getting pushed, keep taking it back and allow yourself to feel that emotion. But don't look at it from the adult perspective. Look at the emotion from the age that you were when you first felt it. So when I felt that first abandonment at age 3.5, I had to go back and feel that as that 3.5-year-old and recognize that even though I admire my mother for all that she did for us and all that she accomplished in her life, I still had to look at that 3.5-year-old. All she felt was abandoned in that moment.
Hmm. Well, of course, as you said at the beginning of the program, that was the time when you had lost your father and uncle.
Mm-hmm. And here's my mother at a very young age with two young children, a widow.
Yes.
And she went to nursing school and she built a house and had to do all of these things. And this was her family that we were with. In her mind, we were with family. In my mind, I didn't know those people.
Mm.
I hadn't met them since I was a newborn. I didn't know them.
No.
But this is that opposite end of the stick that, you know,
it's interesting to look back like that. Now, I'm certain you would view your life in early 2008 as a very big change in your path when you were led to a small inner city church and you joined it. Would that be correct? Was that a big turning point for you?
It was, because it was so very different for me, and I'm still with that church. Not anything I'd ever experienced before, but these are loving, caring people that I'm with, and they don't always, you know, understand all that I do outside of this, but they certainly see the results of it. And this is the pastor that I was talking about that really does. I've heard him just channel spirit directly.
Yeah.
And I've gotten such good nuggets from him. Even though, with his background, he's still in a lot of the dogma and doctrine of the church, and that's the part that I sort of chip away a little bit at a time. It's kind of my job there, as long as I'm led to be there. But yes, I've gotten a lot of really golden nuggets from him, just that I know are pure channeling. He was in the pulpit one time, and I've gotten my favorite mantra, which is, I am the light of the world. You can't stop me. You can't hide me. You can't shut me up. and I absolutely love that, because that really is how we are to be in the world. We are to be the light of the world. Mm. We're not to hide our light under a bushel. We are to feel our own divinity. We are aspects of God, and that's what we are to present to the world.
Right.
And so, yeah, I'm still there, and I have seen the results of just being sometimes the only Caucasian in a room full of African Americans, and some that are shocked at that, and yet the change that comes about in them when they can open their minds to something new and different. And it's just, it's a lovely experience. There's a lot of places that I go that it's a little disconcerting, more for them than for me. I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm comfortable anywhere. And so it doesn't, it, just that fact, just that I can go in and be absolutely comfortable in the midst of anywhere, makes them comfortable too. It gets some people that get very stuck in their own little spaces, in their own little neighborhoods, the ability to think beyond that little box that they put themselves in. And now that I'm out front a lot more as a teacher and speaker, it has even more of an impact. And it's just that little bit of awakening, even if it's just one person at a time. If yes. I can make somebody just a little more awake and aware, a little more outside of their comfort zone, that's a good thing.
Is it in this church that you run your Beyond the Bible study groups?
No, that's a little scary. It's a little too outside the dogma and the doctrine. There's a lot that I do outside of the church.
Yes.
Including, I really love that whole, I am a member of the Sanctuary of the Magdalene, which is devoted to more bringing in the feminine energy, and it's the founder of that that has written that series of books. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yes.
But it's a little bit outside the bounds of the dogma and the doctrine. Not carried them quite that far yet.
Right. Is that because you're taking the Bible and with your understanding, you're sort of adding to it, but in a way that you hope enlarges people's understanding?
That's absolutely what I do. A good example is I'm also a huge fan of Christ Returns, the Christ Letters. Mm-hmm. And I took straight from there his parable, as faith as a mustard seed, how he presents it in the Christ Letters. Not just how it is in the Bible, but how he is presented in the Christ Letters. And I actually gave a sermon on that in the church that was extremely well received, even by, the first one I gave was to a group of pastors. And they got it, because I could relate it also to Scripture. But it really was from Christ's letters, not from the Bible. Hmm. Not directly from the Bible.
I guess you were helped in that respect by probably what you learned from the book, The Course of Miracles.
Yes, it started with The Course in Miracles. Actually, The Course in Miracles showed me how to read the Bible.
Right, yes.
How to reinterpret the Bible and not always put that negative connotation on it. And I really enjoyed A Course in Miracles, and that was a jump start to that whole source. I love Margaret Starber's books. They were truly enlightening. And now, the Christ Letters, and I have friends that are Christian Science.
Right.
And it's amazing how, again, when you read all these truths and you read Sufi and you get the statements from the Dalai Lama, they all mesh, they all match.
Yes. Now, talking of Bibles, I have what I think is an unusual one. It's the Bible as translated by Saint Germain.
Oh, how interesting. I don't have that one.
No.
I think well, you...
I came across it as a in a second-hand shop, and I was so intrigued by it. Obviously, I had to buy it. So, yeah, I've never come across it anywhere else or heard of anyone who's read it. So it's strange. It must have had a very limited publication, I would think. So I mentioned that purely out of interest. Look, Pamela, we're racing towards the end of the programme. I'd like you to have a minute or two to be able to give out your website address and any other information relating to it. But what you must tell me and our listeners is, where did you get the name Pam Ramadharma for your website address?
Well, I wish I had a better story for this, but it was actually when I was trying to figure out an email address years ago that I could remember, that I wasn't just a Pam L 2387, and it just came to me, Pam Ramadharma, because I was also on a blog site that you had to have a little handle, so it's really more like Pam Ramadharma Ding Dong.
Well, I must say, it does make it stick in your mind anyway. So would you like to give the full website address so that people can make a note if necessary?
I would. It's www.pamramadama, that's pamramadama.com. And right. Everything, all my emails are pamramadama@gmail.com or pamramadama@earthlink.net. And I do readings by phone, by email, and in person if they're local.
Right. Now, if you do them by email, do you want to give out your email address?
Sure. It's pamramadama@gmail.com or pamramadama@earthlink.net.
Right, that's quite straightforward. Okay,
it makes it easy.
Right, that's fine. Right, what have we got left? Well, I think I should mention that you have, as a result of all your experiences, chosen Jesus the Christ as your master teacher.
That's right.
Hence, I guess, your obvious interest in the New Testament. And I suppose this reflects really your whole upbringing, doesn't it? And the way your pathway has moved from sort of one experience to another, you finally found your home.
I have, and it's maybe not the Jesus the Christ that we were introduced to as children, but it's certainly the Christed energy that I believe infuses Source, and what comes through Source is that golden energy that we all reach out to. It's certainly the energy that you channel through. And to me, that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter what anybody's path is, what their choice is, as far as a master teacher, as long as, you know, they kind of have one. And as long as it leads right back to Source.
Right, I'm going to have to stop you there, Pamela. Thank you very much for coming onto the program.
Well, thank you. It was a delight.
Well, it's been very interesting to hear your story. We all have one to tell. Anyway, best of luck with your work, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Right, goodbye, Pamela. Right, friends, that was another interesting talk. Next week, I have Scott Alan Roberts. He's written a book called The Rise and Fall of the Nephilim, and it's the untold story of fallen angels, giants on the earth, and their extraterrestrial origins. So that sounds a good one. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.